Av has been pretty well done to death. And one almost gets sick and tired of love talk. We've had so frightfully much of it of late. Love, 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 that's to be the answer for all of the world's problems. And it's, you sort of spray love talk over a situation, and somehow abracadabra, everybody's supposed to come up through the mist, smelling sweet and chortling happily. It's not always as easy as that, particularly when one hears love talk, which is often just a smokescreen for something else. We have to probe and test for the genuine article. And also for the not only the virility, but also the extent of the love that's being spoken of at any time. There is a sort of love talk which is implicitly at least very selective, that loves only a particular slice and nourishes itself with rejection and repudiation of whole other ranges of love and concern. The big objection to what I've said so far, I suppose, comes under criticism from the title of this book, which puts loves in the plural. When people talk about love, capital L and capital L-O-V-E, we have some one of these kind of reverberating magnitudes that tempts us just to sort of wallow or ooze over the whole thing, as if one were speaking of only some great mystical single magnitude. Lewis says loves in the plural and tells us that he's going to talk about only four of them. When he says four, he's telling us that there's a whole lot more than just four, but he's going to talk about these particular ones. And the great value of the book, I think, is in helping us to see that particularity of love. Love that is not particular, but this kind of sort of oozing over everything kind of sweep is a very doubtful thing unless or until it becomes actuality in particularity. And when love becomes living, real, by being particular, then there is a uniqueness about every love. And people who operate with love in the singular are then recognized to be very impoverished people, or people who have only this mystical, floating, oozing overall kind of notion of love. It is of the very nature of love that it is particular. One doesn't love everybody. And those people that go around loving everybody are pretty difficult to bear. There is a kind of pretentious and portentous hypocrisy about loving everybody. It's hard enough to do it one at a time. The key method of the book is to relate a particular love to the love of God, and he sort of comes to that exposition right at the end of the book. But this morning we might look at that sort of number one love, God's love for us, with as our kind of point of reference, getting our bearings from that, so that we chart our course through the whole discussion by reference to that definition of love that we have from God's love for us. Just as at the beginning of the liturgy, we name the name of God, he's there, and everything else that follows in the liturgy has its direction in relationship to that name of God. If there were no name of God that we named at the beginning of our worship, there could be no worship. We could spend an agreeable time just going on about ourselves, but that would be no kind of worship at all. The whole direction of the liturgy is out from the name of God, and his name tells us who he is, what he's done, what he's said, what he's promised, and our whole worship is that name to us, and then the bounce back of that name to him, and who we are in relationship to that name. That is sort of the reference, the source point in all our worship. And when we find ourselves, therefore, in worship, getting preoccupied with ourselves, or carrying on only in a lateral kind of way, then we've lost contact with the point which gives us the reading on where we are and who we are. As in, the greatest hymns are Godward hymns, and not those which just talk about ourselves or wallow in our preoccupations with ourselves. All of that has to be pulled in into that relationship. It's like the mariner getting his reading from the sun with his sextant. Then he knows where he is and can chart his course. Similarly, then, this morning, we might just look at the love of God, and we know the love of God from what he has done. He doesn't just say he loves us, he doesn't just dish out love talk. Love is what makes God tick. It's the life of God in action toward us. Why should God bother to make a universe? He could be quite happy going on being God by himself. And We know the relief of not having to bother about other people or other things. One of the seductive pleasures of Holden is that we get away from all the people and the problems and the things that ordinarily bother us. We can be away from it all. God could have been having his happy Holden time all by himself. But he makes a world. What a world. And a world in which he makes no two things the same. And that's a characteristic of love. He could have run the universe, or he could have had a universe with a few standard models. But there is a lack of efficiency control in love. How, when you see pictures of those extraordinary creatures that live in the depths of the ocean, nobody ever sees but God. And occasionally we get a photograph of the fantastic creatures they are, and no two of them precisely the same. Or if you look through a microscope at a grain of at a drop of water, the myriad life that's going on there, utterly unnecessary. 20 basic fish models would have served the purpose. So that there is in God's love not only a lack of efficiency control or calculation, there is a prodigality which shows a sort of generosity that has a sheer joy in all of these different ones. And that somehow that when a particular species of fish or animals dies out, it is grief to God. For he had joy in creating and sustaining and nourishing the life of each one of these. And the Creator God flung out a whole vast universe. We can't see much point to it. The moon is a dismal disappointment. It's a heap of dust. Who would want to spend a holiday on the moon? And in this vast universe, there's one blob where a thin layer of, on the surface and with an atmosphere, and there life is created. And you look at that in the vast of unimaginable expanses of the universe, and you just gasp. It is impossible to reduce that to any sort of calculation or purposeful efficiency control, but an astonishing creativeness that has joy in making all of that that we can't get our heads around. And in the midst of all that, there's one tiny particular speck. And on that earth, she creates man and says to man, this is for you. Enjoy it. Share with me my kind of joy as you care for and love all of this that it was my delight to make. Because another characteristic of love is that it doesn't draw a line and say, at that point, I stop. And so man is not only set within, in the midst of all his fellow creatures that he is to have a care for and rejoice in, but built into man also is the always more and more flow of love. The moment you get a line drawn across and say, that's as far as love goes, you have negated the very nature of love. And so we are told of man looking at this creation of God, given the task of naming it, that is, of coming to know it in its particularity and its nature. Man is put into a garden. A garden is a place where you do the things for the plants that bring the plants their nourishment, their health, and their fruition. You are there for them as they are there for you. And man looks through the whole of all of that, but he reaches for more than that can supply him with, in that being for and in return being for. And so God made a woman so that there might be a greater love in that being for the someone who is person in a nearer relationship than man could have with any of his other fellow creatures. And that astonishing more of love that God built into man and woman is one of the chapters that we will be coming to. But man and woman are not made just to be clutching and looking at each other the whole time and getting sort of bogged down there. We've got each other. kind of love. Love doesn't ever, it is not of the nature of love thus to be limited, fenced in, bottled up. Just you and me gazing into one another's deep pools. love has always the thrust to more. And so in that greater potential of love that God built into what a man and a woman are, from their coming together, he made the possibility of their happily producing more to love. That love doesn't stop with man and woman, but from them grow children, and each of them then evoking a further opportunity and pull of love on, and children beyond that. Parents know what that pull of love for children means in their lives. It's built into the way we're made. And with children, family, and family then building further to society, and those with next with whom we live, what we call the neighbor, and beyond that more and more, but always with a particularity, so long as it is the real thing, and for the rest the openness toward loving everything that we bump into, but having learned to love not with a standard reaction, but loving in the way that we are for that particular evocation of love, what that particular calls for from us. And so in terms of persons, then we do not come to a person, to any person that we bump into, with a formula or a prescriptive picture of the relationship. That is something that will be born, will happen, will grow out of the particularities of the person that we happen to bump into, and of the person that we are that bumps into them. And so we are different people, a different person, or something different is evoked from us by each person that we meet. And this is destroyed if ever we think that we've got the hang of what it means to love. This is something that we're always learning new with each person that we confront. For there also we need to live out the considerations of efficiency control, or the formula that we might think we've gotten hold of. And so love has as many shapes as it has instances. And we are running counter to the nature of love when we try to standardize it. And by declining to standardize it, we decline the attempt to take it captive or to have it under our control. And we are also kept free then from love's turning into its opposite. That is, it's becoming a law, a demand, as if we've got some standard measurement that we can apply. And people who operate with standardized love and standards of love get themselves into a horrible chasing your tail kind of circle. And all the burden and also the anguish that people can get themselves into when love gets to be this kind of demand. I gotta love people. I'm not loving people the way I ought to love. I gotta try harder. I've got to crank it up somehow. This is to put it all backwards. That is to treat oneself as a love production center. And people who get into the bind of saying, I've got to be a love production center, find themselves in great anxiety and perplexity and all kinds of identity crises. Love doesn't happen that way by my cranking it up and producing it and dishing it out. Love happens. Love is something that's pulled out of me, evoked from me, that's sort of me that answers to what comes at me from somebody else. My love for somebody else is sort of the bounce back of them to me and back. And so love happens not by scrupulous examination of myself or churning around in my innards trying to crank up the feeling of love and that I can feel that I'm loving and that I'm producing it. Love doesn't happen so long as I'm paying attention to myself and worrying about that. It happens as suddenly there's somebody and that person comes at me and from me then comes back to them what may be love. And then what comes what is received by me may not be submitted to any sort of prescription. Love is non-prescriptive for you can only prescribe if you are working with sort of categories or standards upon people. You aren't letting them be unique. As long as we are in the bind of unloving, that is, of prescribing, projecting standards, we inhibit the birth, the growth of love. And so we don't have a prescription or a standard according to which we decide whether somebody is lovable or not. Because the moment we're doing that, we're not letting them be unique, not letting them be their particular self. When we say that somebody's unlovable, we're saying they're not like somebody else that we've found lovable. And some people we find lovable, and then as others are like them, we would find them similarly lovable. Then we are dealing with categories of people. And love never loves by category or by the dozen or the hundred or the standard varieties, but let each person come as the unique one that they are. When you read the Gospels, has it ever struck you how when Jesus got up in the morning, one gets the impression he didn't know what he was going to be doing that day. You never have the sense of an agenda. Now today, I have, at least I, if it's going to be a good day, I have to have healed 3 blind people and forgiven 20 people's sins and called on 27 others. And then at the end of the day, I got my agenda full. He does. You read the Gospels and there's none of that there. He's there for whatever he bumps into next. And whom he bumps into, he's there for them. And he's there for them in a way that's shaped by what they are, where they are in their lives. That's what pulls from him the Jesus that he is for them. And never, you know, sorry, you're not on my list for today, or I can give you 5 minutes, and then there's my appointment at 10:30. That unprescriptive, unstandardized flow of the life of Jesus. That's what love, that is what love is like. And he receives each person for what they are, and what they are evokes what is his love for them. And he doesn't ask whether they're worth bothering about, or he doesn't say, well, you're not my kind of people, or you're not in the right category for me to bother about. He is there for them. And the center of all of that is the cross, where he's there for us. That's what love is like. Now, this morning I've done all the talking, and next time I hope it's quite the other way round, for then you will be primed and stoked with all the treasures, the gems, the nuggets, the insights. And also some of the things that you will say, well, how can the man say that? Or he's got that wrong. Or in my experience, I've never known anything like that. So that in our next session, maximum response prompted by Lewis, but Lewis not as an end in himself here, but as that which prompts the outflow, the input from where you are and your experience, so that that also may be an evocation of love from each of us.